I'm Batman.
I am the prince.
Welcome to Superstitious and Cowardly, a podcast about a rich man beating up the poor. I'm Chris Winia.
And I'm John Pfeiffer.
Ryan is sick today.
It happens. In this podcast, like we said, we'll talk about Batman. Right now, we're talking about the early years. And then eventually, we'll cherry pick onto more important events. Or dead parents. Or dead parents. Or dead parents. And dead parents.
We've got another week before the dead parents crop up, though, I think. So, today I thought I'd start out by asking you a question. What are... Batman has probably the most iconic of, like, superhero villains. One of the problems with a lot of the Marvel movies right now is that they have fun characters, but they don't have really good villains. They're all kind of boring and shit like that. I'm not trying to pick on Marvel because it's a DC. Their movies are making money, so I don't think me talking shit about their villains is really going to do anything to them. But you have Batman's Rogues Gallery is one of the most popular. I think it's rivaled only really by Spider-Man's and maybe Flash's The Rogues.
Yeah.
Pretty fair to say. I mean, there are iconic villains in there, but those are the ones you really know. I've never really read Spider-Man, but I know who the Vulture is, and I know who Dr. Octopus and Rhino and all those guys are, the Sinister Six. I know who those people are.
That's fair enough. Yeah.
So who are your top five Batman villains?
When you asked me that earlier, just to get me thinking about it and everything, first one I thought of actually was Dick Grayson Batman villain, Professor Pig. He's one of those ones that's just really, really messed up. I mean, it's a great when Grant Morrison introduces him in the Batman Robin run, it was a lot of fun. I really liked that character. It was really disturbing. Probably one of the more... disturbing villains I do like.
So he's kind of like a really fucked up version of the Mad Hatter.
Yeah, I think that's actually really, really fair.
Which, I mean, they don't really use the Mad Hatter very well.
No, but I think they use Professor Pig and they got more stuff pretty good. And then
did he come back a lot? Because I really haven't read anything past when he comes back the second time in Grant's run.
The last time he came
back... Oh, and he was in Arkham Knight.
That's right. Last time he came back was in the current going Nightwing run. He's back right now. He's working with, or he was taking direction from Dr. Hurt, which was kind of a weird thing, but it was still Professor Pig being Professor Pig. So a different writer, but he's still true to at least that aspect of the
character. Oh, so they brought back Dr. Character. Hurt, too.
Yeah, in a weird way.
Okay, let's not get into that.
Yeah, we won't get into that. So Pig.
So my second one is Dr. Hurt. Oh, no!
Pig. I want to say Bane, but only when Bane's written well.
Bane is definitely on my list. We'll get to that.
Yeah, so we have him, Bane. We'll go Ra's, but more of the Denny O'Neil Ra's, less of the newer written versions of him, I think, because it goes away and it's a little bit different. Maybe Talia. I think I actually put Talia in there just for the whole Damian Wayne stuff.
Really?
Just for that, because Damian Wayne's such a big thing for me and I really like him. And it's just...
Because that was one of your first runs, right? The Damian and first coming in?
You know what? Yeah, I think it was.
I think it was your first run.
It was the current stuff going on when I was really starting to get into things.
Yeah.
And then I think that's four. What would be my fifth?
Probably the Joker?
I think it would be the Joker, but I think that's more as a default. Again, that one kind of like Ra's is if it's written well in certain stories. In other stories... It's just so odd and it's just so off-putting that I don't really care for him. There's so many different versions of the Joker that I think that you kind of have to pick like your own.
Yeah, like I'd probably say that like Joker's probably like bottom five for me just because... Yeah.
Which is weird because I really like the Joker.
I love the Joker, but like...
But there's so many times that it's been done oddly. I'll be
It's
nice.
Like in the 80s when they decided that he wasn't just like this crazy clown, but he was like the guy that always had to fuck with Batman's head. And like that can work. There are some issues that I've actually picked like from the 90s that we're definitely going to look at where they do it really well and it doesn't involve beating somebody to death with a crowbar. The problem is that like they had him kill Jason Todd.
Right.
And it was supposed to be like, well, that will be the end of the Joker.
At least for a while. But
no,
it was
supposed to be like, that's the end of the Joker.
Really?
Well, because, like, I mean, he killed Jason Todd. You really can't go back from that. And you threw me off.
I know, but I really wanted to do that.
Just because you wanted to drink.
I wanted to drink so bad.
But it was just like, well, you can't just kill off the Joker. So they kept bringing him back.
Fair enough.
Second would probably be the Riddler.
Yeah, I can see that.
You better drink your beer before it gets all over the equipment.
I'll just wrap my lips right around that bottle.
The funny thing is that, like, the whole time we're always going to say, but only when it's used right for these characters. Because when it's used right...
It's very memorable.
It's very good.
When it's not used well, it's still memorable, but you kind of wish you could forget sometimes.
I always remember, like, Kevin Smith did, like, a Green Arrow run.
Green Arrow one's fantastic.
His whole thing was just like, after the Riddler got caught, he was just like an annoyance to him. And it's like, it's supposed to be that he's like a genius that does these, that likes like stupid puzzles. But he's usually used as like a joke character. So remember, there's one called Dark Knight, Dark City, where he really, I'm probably going to look at that one too, because that's a good one.
That'd be fun.
Where he's really tricking Batman. Batman says he thinks he's so smart, but it's like written in such a way as like, he's so annoying. He thinks he's so clever, but I'm more like, he's kind of like bitching to himself. Another one would be Bane.
When he's first introduced, I think that's just a Denny O'Neill thing. I mean,
no, he wasn't really primarily written with Denny O'Neill.
That's true.
But I think Denny O'Neill wrote Ezreal, and Chuck Dixon wrote most of the Bane, the Nightfall stuff.
Okay, that makes sense.
No, Bane, when he's worked really well, there was a story where he thought that Thomas Wayne was his father.
I don't think I ever read that.
It's a super fun story.
See, these are some of the ones I'm going to look forward to as we move on. And
he
stuff.
Thinks, so like, he moves into Wayne Manor. He starts fighting crime with Batman, and he becomes like really close to like Alfred and stuff.
Is this a main continuity thing?
It was from, they did like Gotham Knights.
Okay.
Which was supposed to be focusing on like the sidekicks. It was right after No Man's Land, and you had the new Batgirl.
Okay.
And I was like Cassandra Cain too.
They're finally using her.
That's a sad story.
They're finally using her a little bit better right now in current continuities.
But there's just a bunch of stuff with like him that like made him kind of endearing in a way.
Yeah.
Another one that I absolutely love is Scarface and the Ventriloquist.
You prefer traditional ventriloquist, because I know there's a female one that I know very little about.
It wasn't necessarily a bad one, because it was another one that they had made the ventriloquist a joke. And she was fine for what she was. It was like kind of the same thing.
I liked her when they did a second run of Secret Six.
But Alan Grant, taking time away from, you know, his trips to Jurassic Park and Isla Nublar, he wrote these really fun stories, and it was mainly about the rivalry between the Penguin and Scarface, because Alan Grant was really good at writing the Penguin, and Scarface is just like really fun, because like he'd always have this, you wouldn't know if it was the ventriloquist was insane or if it was like a demonic thing. There's one called the Psychodrama where he throws it away and it keeps getting picked up by other people who keep like it, like a kid shows his dad and it like bites the dad and all this like weird maybe stuff happens to him. So it was like that one, and like it was the only like modern Batman villain they did in like the Batman cartoon series. I think they really got their head around. I actually like saw an action figure for him based on that, and I was like, ooh, I kind of want that one, because they had one with the Joker and Scarface, and I never bought it.
Right.
For Arkham Asylum, the video game. And now it's worth like $200. Like, ah, raspberries.
See, that's one of those things that I really like, the video games and stuff. The style. I always prefer that comic book style over like a cartoon style or a video game style or movie style. Just something about it gravitates to me more. So that was how many for you so far?
That was four. So the last one would be Hugo Strange.
Damn, I forgot about Hugo.
I like Hugo Strange. It was a shame that he was like, he does this speech in Arkham City that is just like amazing. You can go visit where your parents were gunned down, and he leaves a videotape to mock you. And it's just like the best speech. And it just ends with him like saying, I look forward to breaking you.
That's one of the first encounters like in media, like book, movies, whatever, where they just pretty much say the psychologist is also crazy. It's his job to combat these kind of mental illnesses and that. But it's equally just as crazy.
I don't necessarily know if he was a psychologist. Like, we'll see him pretty quick. He shows up.
He tries to act
in a couple issues, so we'll see how that goes. But I just really like, in the 70s, there was a story called Strange Tales. I think it was. No, Strange Apparitions. Kind of became the model for how they did Batman in the 80s, but it was very serialized. And it was just about him finding out Batman was Bruce Wayne and basically trying to sell it. They turned it into a Batman the Animated Series episode.
I think I remember that.
Yeah, and then Rupert Thorne killed him and he kept showing up. That's why he's an apparition. But and it's definitely something we're going to look at, because it ends with The Laughing Fish, which is another like classic Joker story.
It really is. Like, that's one of the first few Animated Series ones that I remember kind of right off the bat.
Yeah, which is like, we'll get into it, but it's based on The Laughing Fish and Joker's Five-Way Revenge, which is another like seminal Joker story. We'll get to it eventually.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
But what are we doing today?
In this episode, we're going to talk about Detective Comics 30 and 31. DC 30, Someone is Killing with Dr. Death's M.O. And then in Detective Comics 31, Werewolves in Paris, but I thought the whole song was in London, so we're going to have to figure that out.
Well, there's a movie, Werewolves in Paris, and it's based on Werewolves in London, which is a movie from the 80s. It's pretty good, but weird. It features zombies yelling at the guy who killed them, saying, why'd you kill us?
So we can't figure out what it's trying to be, just like what we're going to see in Detective Comics 31.
Maybe.
There's no consistency. So this is Detective Comics number 30. We open up with Batman just hanging outside the house of Dr. Death. Everything's in flames, and it's like, oh, well. And then a few days later, he's reading the morning papers, and he just sees the MO of Dr. Death, and he has this strange gut feeling, he's pretty sure that Dr. Death's alive. So
he also calls him his sworn enemy.
They met once a week ago. He's just like, I really want an enemy. This could be it. So while he's smoking and reading the newspaper next to his Batman costume chest, he decides that he's going to have to investigate. He's going to check out the home of the widow of the murdered man. And when the maid opens the door, she has like this giant head. Like it's another time where the proportions are just a little bit off. Like it doesn't match the rest of her body. I like seeing those in comics. And you still see that in comics nowadays.
Well, speaking of the art, I would be remiss to mention that for the second time in my life, Hulu has made me a fool.
What'd they do?
Not since I clicked subscribe thinking, oh, this would just be like a Netflix with TV. There is a documentary out right now called Batman and Bill. And it's all about...
Bill Finger,
okay. And how he was the one that created Batman all the way back in the 30s, and it had all the talking heads going, well, actually, you're completely wrong about what you said last week, and it had Kevin Smith in there, because whenever they do documentaries, they always gotta ask Kevin Smith for some reason.
I think it's just because he's not necessarily he's definitely not the most important figure for Batman, but he's one of the more outspoken.
Well, no, he's a celebrity.
Yeah.
Quotation marks. You can't see them, but I'm making them. So the art, Bill, even though it says Bob Kane, Bill pretty much is credited with a
lot
of
it says
stuff.
Bob now. It doesn't say Robert. Robert Kane. It says Bob Kane now. Batman's ears are still kind of out to the side way more than we'll see
him in the
future.
Pretty much there, though.
But it's much more solid. His belt is that weird. It doesn't have that round dial in the middle of it. It's a much nicer version, and considering it's only been a few issues in, they're really narrowing it down pretty quick.
Also, like the title says, the Batman, and it's black and red. It's this interesting thing that Batman always kind of gets associated with red for some reason. Like the Batmobile was red, and the titles are usually like have red in the title.
Yeah,
it's just this interesting thing that kind of crapped up way back there. So it's probably all.
It's probably something they had limitations with the color and stuff, too, and everything.
It's entirely possible, but...
So he visits the widow, and he's just asking the basic questions. Finds out that the victim was trying to be extorted by somebody. He's assuming Dr. Death, and at this point, it's pretty much a given. And then the widow says that they did lose all their money to the oppression, so I'm kind of thinking he's picking a really lousy target. However, the widow does let him know that they apparently have some nice cubic zirconians, and they might actually be worth something. They're just some random diamonds that the husband collected, but that's probably the motivation for the extortion. So Bruce is talking to the widow of the man that has just been killed. She's explaining that they did get a threatening letter and that her husband's dead pretty much because of this. And Bruce is pretty much sure that Dr. Death is the one behind it. Everything points to him. And through conversation, he finds out that they don't really have any money, but they do have some diamonds stashed away.
So as first,
you know what? It kind of makes sense for that time period. Every once in a while, you hear stories about like people finding weird like bases of like money in an attic and stuff like that. Gold will never depreciate until no one wants it anymore.
Until the apocalypse where it's useless.
Yeah, and then you go with bottle caps. But basically, Bruce just says, hey, first thing you should do is find a different place for those diamonds. Somewhere safe. As soon as he heads out, he's thinking, okay, I'm going to go change into my outfit. It's 6 o'clock, so it's almost time for bed. I'll head home, go into my costume chest, and we'll dress as Batman, and we'll head on over.
Making sure to grab Chekhov's gas vials.
I noticed that the car is a lot longer than it was the last time. Like, I don't know if he's super excited or what's happening.
John
there.
Loves that car.
I have a weird fascination with that sedan, but and proportions in the way that it's drawn in these comics, especially the early stuff. He gets over to the house. He's gonna jump the fence, but he does a weird in-between stuff where he's at the old lady's house and he's gonna stake the place out. But he just kind of he's facing the wall and then kind of looks back and does a dramatic pose.
He does the
and then
looks back. Pose.
Like in my head, I'm just hoping he's kind of like ta-da!
The artist doesn't want us to know that that's not Bela Lugosi.
And then Batman jumps the wall, and I do really like the art there. Like it's a much better angle. It's a little better drawn than the last couple of issues. Speeding along, Batman tries to go through the window on the first floor. Windows are barred. Jumps up to the second floor. Is just very happy with himself that while he's a master detective, he just went through an open window, so it's no big deal. And then he automatically finds the spot where the diamonds are hidden. They're behind a painting in a wall safe. Even though he specified to the lady to move where those diamonds were, he just knew that she wasn't for some reason. There, it's an odd bit of contradiction with himself. Like, you wouldn't think he'd even try to be looking in that spot anymore or something. It's just one of those odd things with me. So while Batman is trying to guess the combination to the safe, we cut away to another room, and they basically confirm, even though this guy has bandages all over his face,
he looks that like meanwhile, Hush, so that means the story is shit.
So he looks like Hush, but the panel immediately says, meanwhile, Dr. Death still lives. And he's talking to Jabba 2.0. I think his name is Mikhail.
But he's a Cossack.
Well, I don't even know what that means.
I believe that's Russian.
Then why is he dressed like he's Indian?
I know. They go and take... I could swear that's Russian. I'm probably wrong because I'm always wrong when I say shit on this thing. Apparently his, like... And they mentioned something about, like, his never-ending supply of Cossacks or some shit like that.
It's a term that we should probably know, but I don't really care to do research for it.
Cossack has shown up twice in media, and it's both a negative for me. It's in the game, the deadliest game. The guy that hunts the other guy is a Cossack. And they mention how he's like, they kind of go racist on, he's like the evil little Cossack. And then also Goldeneye, the main bad guy, his parents were Lenin's Cossacks.
Mm-hmm.
And I always assumed that that meant that they apply that he's Russian, because the guy, he's like talking to the other Russian guys like, you know, his parents were traitorous Lenin Cossacks. And the guy's like, oh, I didn't know that shit. And so he gets shot in the head because of it.
So because I don't want to do research and we think that we know what it is, if you want to correct us, that email is sac.alfred@gmail.com. I'm going to plug that every chance I get.
So or just play Goldeneye.
Yeah.
64.
Yeah, don't even listen. You know, listen to us while you're playing Goldeneye. That's probably the most... That's probably the best experience you could have of both worlds.
So anyways, back to the Cossack.
Anyway, Dr. Death is giving Jabba 2.0 a lowdown of what's really happening. He's talking about the widow again. He's saying that, hey, go back to your house, grab those diamonds, and then bring them to a fence in the Bowery. So smash cut back to, apparently that was a flashback, but that's kind of hard to understand right away. We're flash forwarding.
Yeah, he shows up just as Batman's looking at the diamonds.
So either he took like 4 hours opening that safe, like... 1, 2, 3. Nope, that's not the combination. 2, 3, 4. Nope, that's not the combination. So they smash cut to where Jabba's coming in at the same time, and Batman just hides behind a curtain because that's what a master detective does. He hides behind the shadows.
He also leaves the diamonds out.
Right.
And Jabba 2.0 is so stupid. He's like, whoa, the diamonds are out. That's great. Like, anybody would ever do that.
He doesn't try to look around to see if anyone else is nearby.
Batman puts it underneath a box with a stick propped up. He's like, well, there they are.
So while Batman is trying to just observe the situation for Mikhail, and he even says that the guy kind of looks like Jabba. So this is some really racist.
He doesn't, though.
He doesn't. He's just like, oh, he's dressed kind of like Jabba. They all look alike. Whoa, Bruce, come on. So meanwhile, the old lady is in another spot, part of the house, and she just wants to get a nice glass of milk or something. And while she's going through, she spots Mikhail. And Mikhail's instantly like, you know, I'm going to shoot her. No big deal. I'll grab the diamonds and I'll get going. And at the same time, Batman rushes him, kind of pushes him down. And then I assume the windows on the other side of the room somehow punches him through the window at the same time. And he assumes that the guy's knocked out. So he grabs the diamonds, throws the diamonds out the window so that Mikhail will wake up and just assume that nothing's wrong, and he just leaves with the diamonds, even though there's a ton of
which
loose...
he does, like there's he's a fucking idiot.
There's a ton of loose threads everywhere. So he throws the diamonds outside.
Oh, good, that guy that was beating me up just let me go, and I got the diamonds, too.
Oh, nothing suspicious here. That should be fine. It's the 30s, you shouldn't be worried about trackers or anything like that, but someone's probably watching you.
Also, why the fuck is he even giving him the diamonds? If he had failed, the guy would have probably just gone home.
He would have done the exact same
thing. And that's all he
thing.
Does is just follow him home.
He would have done the exact same thing. I mean, I guess you're trying to catch the... I mean, if it's like drugs, you know, you don't go for the dealer, you go for the supplier. Maybe he's trying to find the supplier, which is the fence that would buy this stuff
just
in the first place.
Just trying to show him how smart he is. I got plans.
This is the first time he almost sort of does detective work.
Kinda.
And he doesn't do it that well.
He goes to his house.
He takes the old lady who faints, puts a damp cloth on her head, heads off, follows Jabba.
She's had kind of a shitty week in all
she
fairness.
Does. So Batman,
she goes, dear me, I can't sleep. Probably because your husband was murdered recently.
She's oddly calm, actually.
She's very
considering
calm
that her husband's
everything.
Dead. So Batman's lets Mikhail get off, and he's driving away. And Batman just tailgates him. Like, that's how you go undetected. You just tailgate the person in front
of
you.
Oh, yeah, he's like, he's not even a car length in between.
You're supposed to leave, like, 2 car lengths, and that's like, I mean...
they decide to show us this in 2 panels that are the exact same, just different directions.
Pretty much. So Batman follows him to the fence. Once Mikhail leaves, Batman follows Mikhail to his apartment. decides not to go through the front door or any other windows, but just goes up to the roof, lands through a
skylight.
Thank you. I don't know why I'm forgetting words. And I assume this is just like a hallway skylight or something like that, because he just finds a random room that Mikhail's staying in. And he throws in a glass pellet, and okay, this will knock him out.
That's that gas vial we were talking about that they set up.
Yeah, he sets the gas vial, glass vial shatters, and that works out fine. And Mikhail spurts out, not what's going on, but, oh, I'm choking, and then he just instantly falls asleep. So he's able to talk briefly, and no big deal. So meanwhile, Batman's just looking through his drawers, trying to see if he can find any information. Because when I store something away, I just put it in my sock drawers, you know.
You don't wait for him to go to the place that you're trying to find information on. You just rifle through his shit.
And the part that I kind of thought just a little odd is he knocks this guy out, but he doesn't specify how long the gas is supposed to work, and he doesn't tie him down or anything. Doesn't find what he's looking for, and he searches the place. But Kale has a gun just pointed right at him because he already woke up. So it just seems like poor... He's not, for somebody that leaves silken ropes outside of ledges so he can make a quick getaway, he doesn't have a lot of planning or follow through for a lot of other things.
So anyways, he jumps onto a silken rope that's just out the windowsill so he can get a quick getaway.
Right.
He swings away, and then, like, Jabba?
Everyone's
doing
it.
What was his name again?
Mikhail.
He calls the Navy, puts him on standby. He looks out the window like, whoa, what a thrilling escape. And then Batman
just loops around
and fucking kicks him in the neck and snaps his neck.
And they specify that he has kicked him in, they specify his neck's broken.
With a sickening snap.
This is a confirmed death.
This is number two.
This is number two, well, I think it's two or three confirmed.
Two or three.
The point is, we're only a few issues in and I'm losing count already. I mean, it's a really sick kind of move. It's kind of cool, but at the same time, this should really bother him. Anyway, Batman calls the cops and goes, hey, I think I know where the diamonds are. BT dubs, I totally killed the guy. And then he heads off and finds the fence.
Fence is Geppetto from Pinocchio.
My boy did it. I didn't do anything.
My boy.
Plausible deniability.
I have a puppet over there. Ah, the ventriloquist won't be around for another 50 years.
Wait, how did I know that? He knows the future now. So Batman's confronting this pawn shop owner. I'm just going to say pawn shop owner. That's basically what he is. He confronts him. And he tries to get away at the same... The fence tries to get away at the same time.
He just pushes a table on him, which looks like a pretty big table, actually.
I know, it's like one of those wooden spools they use for, like, big cables and stuff like that. The guy tries to run away, and
so
while...
Batman's just like, well, I've already killed one guy, why not another one? So he throws another rope around his neck.
And he notices that he's wearing a bad wig and a mask, and then he pulls them off, and it's Dr. Death! And he just laughs and says that the fire destroyed his face, but he still wanted revenge. They specify earlier, it is a week later. He's already on his feet with his face melted off.
Like, to describe him, he kind of looks like the Crypt Keeper.
He looks like the Crypt Keeper and Red Skull at the same time. Like, it's a weird it's a weird combination. But it's a week later, dude. You should be bedridden. Those bandages that he had earlier on, those hush bandages, those should have been bloodied like hell. The recovery time on this guy is amazing. But basically, issue quickly ends with him... with Batman tying him up, leaving a note for the cops, and saying, I'll see you next time, I'm just going to keep operating like normal.
Question I have for you, John, is why bother bringing Dr. Death back?
They wanted a story, and they're like...
It didn't need to be Dr. Death at all.
No, they didn't, but I think they started off the story of, how can we bring Dr. Death back? And then they just insert that character into a story that anyone else could have been the thing for.
Maybe.
It could have been... Frenchie Blake all over again, and no one would have bat an eye. That would have made more sense, actually, is to have Frenchie Blake come back if they're set on the story.
Yeah, because he dealt with Jules.
You know, Frenchie Blake and his gang.
Dapper Frenchie Blake.
And now let's talk about Detective Comics number 31. This is the first appearance of the Monk. First off, super fun cover.
Yeah, it's a really iconic one. I'm actually wearing a t-shirt that has a variation on it right now.
It's a creepy monk.
It's very gothic.
Guy. It is. I just like that it's Batman towering over top. His ears, though, do seem a little demonic. They, like, curl just a little bit towards the top.
It's basically Dr. Death holding a blonde woman going towards a castle
on
a hill.
Death, it's the Monk.
Ooh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know. He's our favorite villain at this point, but it is a different fella.
So Monk is looking, and, he's got his sanitizer on. He's doing his hands. And that's all I know about that show. and he's going towards a castle on a hill. The moon's out, and there's a lot of fog, and Batman's just looking down on them like as a giant.
But it's a fun cover. This is the first.
It's very
time,
iconic.
It's the first time they do this kind of angle and this sizing where you can tell it's on purpose and not just a weirdly style art choice. So Batman is patrolling the city.
Well, first off, we start with what is kind of the classic Batman logo now.
It's much more improved.
It's got his head onto like a bat signal with Batman. It's no more the.
I'm so glad they're starting to drop that.
I think they've also dropped the hyphen. So we're now into Batman.
I love this kind of phrasing. This branding is more favorite.
And this will be like his logo for
a long time.
30, 40 years.
At least. It's one of those things that I just find odd when they put the in front of a character. It's like saying the John. It's just so odd. The Green Arrow.
And kind of going with stuff. The outfit wise, we're now kind of into the Batman outfit that he'll have.
It's a much more classic version.
Pretty much till now. You got the ears. You got like.
We got the ears. We got the underpants that won't go away until like 2010, and I'm perfectly fine with the underpants, to be honest. It looks a little bit nicer, but this is pretty much, you know, the unchanging look. This is the template, the principal forge,
yeah,
of everything. And we established that the city that Batman's been operating in is New York.
Yep, New York.
With it, this is confirmed.
I mean, we'll have a couple years till the lawsuit comes in where New York sues them.
How can
that.
A city do that?
I'm fucking with you, John.
So I'm the gullible one, if anyone hasn't noticed
just,
okay, that.
Just
we're
did it quick.
We're so. 30 episodes in, and it's all gullible John from here on out. But Batman sees that an assault's going on the street, and it's kind of weird view. It looks like it's the building for a second until you realize that it's just a lady on the sidewalk. So Batman sees this assault going on, and he immediately, it's a woman in a bathrobe trying to go after this guy in a fedora. Picks up the guy in the fedora, brings him up to.
How's
this,
he pick him up though, John?
He uses his silken rope.
Where's he pick him up though? It looks like he hangs him by his fucking neck.
No, it looks like it's the torso.
I think neck, but we'll agree to disagree.
You just wanted to kill something. Also, I noticed that it's written stories by Garner Fox this time around. So maybe that's why I like the story just a little bit more. I know I'm bad-mouthing Bill Finger a little bit.
We really haven't
talked about writers that much.
Talked about writers at all because there's not a lot to go on.
They could say one thing and it could easily be another. It's so poorly documented and stuff.
You actually got me for my birthday. Showcase presents Batman 6, which has the beginnings of the Danny O'Neill run.
Love Danny O'Neill.
On the contents page, they actually have a disclaimer that says that they tried to get all the names right as they can, but records from the area are sketchy at best. Or something to that effect. So
yeah, it's
because it wasn't really a priority back then.
No, it wasn't because we own it.
And we're talking about the 70s too for that.
You're right. I was putting it in a different context at the time. But either way, Batman sees assault on the street. It's a woman in a bathrobe trying to attack a guy and saying that I've been sent by the Master Monk. So we already know who the villain is right off the bat.
But we find out that it is a very special victim.
The fiancée of Bruce Wayne, Julie Madison.
Which is the first time that we've heard of her.
So you think that would have been a conversation between Commissioner Gordon and Batman. It's like, hey, so how's the fiancée doing?
Speaking of which, we haven't seen Commissioner Gordon for a couple of stories, haven't we?
He's been mentioned, though. Batman has been writing little love notes to him every once in a while. Like we agree on that. Hey, Commish, I stopped some more bad guys for you.
So we get this great scene where he's driving her home.
Because she snaps out of whatever hypnotism has been done to her and everything.
And she don't look bad.
And she's just, you know, I don't know where I am. Who are you? Why won't you talk?
And he's just driving her
and not saying a word. And Batman driving somebody and not saying anything, that's perfectly normal to me. I'm okay with that. He doesn't want to give it away.
The first time.
She'll know his voice, possibly. However, she is in Batman's car, which is Bruce Wayne's car. She doesn't notice her hoodie in the back seat. Like, what's going on? There's got to be like some old makeup in the glove box, something.
She's used to being in the back, not the front.
Ooh.
Thank you for, being a 90s, they're married with children crowd for a second there.
I couldn't help myself. So Batman drops her off and he says, make sure to tell your fiance Bruce Wayne what happened tonight. I just picture him kind of giggling to himself. Make sure you tell Bruce Wayne.
He's not even being smart about this.
He doesn't, but I just want to
think. He drives her home and she's like, how do you know where I live? How do you know who my fiance is? How come you're the same height as him?
Why are you driving his car?
Why are you driving his car? Why do you have that outfit that he likes to have sex in?
I mean, the mask is different, but
it's the same outfit.
So the next morning, Julie, who now looks like a weird, what's Wednesday Addams? Who played Wednesday Addams? She looks like Christina Ricci a little bit in that middle panel. You know what I can tell? There's a 5 head. Her forehead's so big. But either way, they go see a doctor, and they're trying to say, you know, she has these weird symptoms. We don't know what it is. They're implying hypnotism.
No, he says it.
Does he?
Sounds like he does say it.
And, you know.
Not that I have any personal experience with that. Ha ha.
I would advise an ocean voyage. And this first time you see his face, you can just tell that he is, like, either under duress, pooping himself, or under some kind of hypnotism. Like, he is super hot and heavy about this.
He also looks like fat Jim Gordon.
He does look like Jim Gordon. It's like Jim Gordon's cousin. Well, Jim, what did you do? Well, I told a guy that he killed his dad and to calm down. And, oh, I told this one lady she should go to Paris and there's vampires everywhere. But he does recommend.
A little while ago, I gave up on my lifelong dream of trying to find my long-lost brother. A police commissioner or something like that.
I know the bit you're going for.
Yeah, we should probably just cut that whole thing.
Nope, leave it in. So he's like, yes, an ocean voyage. And he's being oddly specific. To Paris, perhaps. And perhaps later to Hungary, the land of history and werewolves.
Dun, dun, dun. No one talks like that.
And that's the thing, though. They take his advice. As soon as they can, they're going and they're buying her a boat ticket. Bruce isn't going with her, but they're buying her a ticket so she can go to Paris on lunar liners.
Because you gotta get that werewolf shit in.
The thing is, they just point out how, I mean, they kind of talk about that he was being
Bruce is like,
odd,
I don't like how he made that joke about werewolves. It's fine, I'm sorry.
And
to
that he detailed the itinerary of our trip before we made it. It's so odd, and they're asking the audience to go along with it. So he lets Julie go off on this boat. And he's, you know, I'll go stake out the situation. I want to observe as Batman. So now we know that he has a bat gyro that's going to use to...
It's a helicopter that looks like a bat.
It's a bat gyro with a little propeller on the front, I think. He's going to track down Julie. He's going to monitor the situation. And he also has a new device, the Batarang.
Which is actually called Batarang, too.
Which is. And I really... This is fun. Like, a Batarang should have been in as soon as possible. And now that I get it, I'm loving it.
But the whole... Robin was the one that influenced all this bat shit.
Right?
That's something that's
tacked in later. I mean, if you start naming everything bat something in front of it, then maybe. But at least Bruce Wayne
has, like, a computer that has bat ears on it in some comics. He has chairs that have bat ears. He's very into branding.
He's not against it. At the very least, he's like, okay, cool. I got somebody to do some market testing on for some of this phrasing. So either way, Batman heads out, and it's a scene. You see a scene with him flying over the city, and most people are like, "Hey, cool, it's a bat."
No, most people are terrified.
Well, there's at least one guy that's really terrified, and he just is like some kind of hick. The world, we're being attacked by Martians. He's an idiot.
Batman just looks down like, "Hello, sir."
I know this is a simpler time, but people know what planes are. It's not odd to see something flying overhead.
Well, I mean, probably is, though.
Maybe a little.
You're in downtown, you see a giant flying bat, you'd probably be a little freaked out.
But to
out
go to Alien
it.
Right away is just so odd. So they fast forward to Batman catching up to this ocean liner after, you know, a couple hours, I guess.
Because apparently it has massive fuel tanks.
Yeah, he just gets there pretty quick. And they don't really say how this thing's powered. So I just imagine, like, if you saw, like, a cutaway of it, it would just be Batman just pedaling really, really hard. Yep. Like, it's kind of like some Flintstones helicopter.
So he leaves it in hover, climbs down onto the ship.
Yeah, they don't specify how it can do that.
Keep in mind, he could have just...
stayed with her?
Gone with her?
He could have stayed with her, kept a costume with him. He makes it so much harder than he needs to. So, Batman catches up. And while nothing's really going on, decides just to drop on top of the liner. Like, he's not intervening.
Yeah, he just talks to her.
In an active scene. He's just talking to her. As soon as he drops down, the monk comes over. And Batman perceives it as a threat. So he goes to throw a batarang, and he totally whiffs right away. Monk just kind of drops down and does some Three Stooges stuff. He just leaps onto the rope that from the helicopter, and he just goes, peace, I'm out. He doesn't try to continue to fight the monk at all. He just leaves. He leaves his fiance at the hands of this terrible person who's doing God knows what.
Also, this scene
like
is
no
completely
reason.
Pointless.
It is. Like,
are we to assume
you could cut
that,
this page out and I wouldn't have noticed.
Are we to assume that the monk has gone to New York to bring one person back to Hungary?
It's terribly inefficient.
I don't have words. And then Batman just kind of shows up just to say hi.
just stopping in Paris. Like, it, was he at, like, some kind of world conference for supervillains and child abduction? And even then, he didn't even abduct a child. He's whiffing this hard. The monk has, like, no sense of priorities. So either way, Batman decides to continue to follow the ship, and he lands in Paris. Why he wasn't able to follow the ship as it was going, and it landed, like, you know, hours later, no idea, because he could catch up to the thing, but it can't beat it there.
So he finds it pretty quick, though, because back in the early days, Batman could find whoever he wanted.
He didn't research anything at all. He automatically just knows, so I'm wondering.
So he goes into a magic bedroom. Detective work. Let's not even poke holes into this already piece of Swiss cheese. So he goes into Julie's bedroom, and standing there, as you do, she has a guard ape.
Yeah, and
we see her sleeping in bed, and there's a fucking ape that is about 2 times as tall as Batman, who I'm pretty sure that, unlike most of these things, he's supposed to be that tall.
You know what? He's supposed to be that tall, but why is Bruce Wayne so much shorter than the doorway?
Oh, shut up. So he jumps out a window into a net.
But, you know, because there's nets. You wouldn't know that by doing any reconnaissance at all. Like, why would you stake out the area you're going to go into?
And suddenly they're in, like, a castle or a dungeon.
They're just magically transported, and it happens so often in these early issues. You know, just, like, you're in one place, and you perceive this room as being one thing, and then it just magically turns into another. It's a holodeck in terms of comic books.
So the monk, who actually kind of looks like a member of the KKK in red.
Yeah, he's got, like, a weird Cobra Commander hood, but yeah, he's very KKK.
And he's got, like, what is that, skull and crossbones on his, it's not very monk-like.
The monk pretty much has Batman over a net, and he's just, you know, hey, we're gonna kill you, we got some wolves in the bottom of this pit, no big deal. So the monk's watching this happen, and Bruce Wayne's,
he turns on the agonizingly slow mechanism.
Because why wouldn't you want to just end this?
You could just cut the rope and he'd be dead.
I need to learn to drop these arguments, because that's gonna be in comic books always and forever.
Yeah.
But the first thing Batman does is take his Batarang, and he shuts off the device. And while he does it, he breaks
glass. He does the greatest trick throw ever.
He does.
He shuts off the lever that's on the wall. He shatters a chandelier. He catches the Batarang, and then he also catches a piece of glass.
Because, you know, that glass isn't going to smash him to ribbons or anything. And he catches the glass to cut the net. He doesn't use the Batarang. He uses the glass.
It looks pretty sharp.
It looks sharp, but why doesn't he use the tool that he has?
So the monk's not really concerned. He just goes, yeah, you won't do that again, and puts his hand on the lever.
So the monk tries to get away. He captures Batman in a cage while Batman's trying to chase him. And then here comes...
He cuts his way out of the net with a glass. Yep. I don't think we mentioned that.
Okay. He cuts out of the net. He chases after the monk. Monk captures him one more time. And Harry and the Hendersons monkey comes in. And
he's
now
grown
he's
quite a bit bigger.
He's like 4 times taller. So I don't know what's happening. I didn't even notice it the first time around.
Another monkey.
They get another monkey. Batman escapes, knocks somebody else out on the way.
With the Batarang, he's been using that a lot. It's very toyetic.
I'm at least loving the Batarang. The Batarang's very useful when he remembers to use it. He goes back to his idling Batplane. I don't know how much gas he has in this
Apparently thing. It's just been kind of chilling up there.
Following the car that he thinks has the monk in it, and all he's able to do is to capture Julie from the monk. Everyone
else
is gone.
He throws a gas pellet into the car that he's chasing. And it just crashes.
And it falls into a tree. So it's like, hope everyone's okay.
Hope he's not dead.
It's the 30. Those things, airbags, they don't exist for quite a while yet. But luckily, he doesn't kill his girlfriend, at least not on purpose. And that's the end of the issue. He's going to keep following the monk, as far as we know.
To Hungary.
To Hungary, because that makes sense. Kinda. He's going to follow the monk. He's not going to take his girlfriend back. He's not going to, you know, put her up somewhere. She's just along for the ride.
Maybe. We'll see in the next issue. If they even decide to address it.
It's just...
Because, I mean, we don't know what his motives are.
Right now...
We don't know why he's doing anything.
We don't know. We just know he has a giant monkey that isn't any actual thing that we know about. It's not like a known species at all. It's just some generic ape.
It's Mighty Joe Young.
I prefer a Harry and Henderson's kind of a thing.
Fair enough.
So it's just... We don't know if the monk's a werewolf or what. They talked about werewolves first. I think in this next issue, they're going to make him be more of a vampire.
Well, we'll talk about that.
I don't
That's
know
That's a good
why.
Segue into... Next issue. So what'd you think, John?
I really like the Batarang. Batarang's one of my favorite things. I mean, in terms of wanting to see all this stuff kind of... All this gadgets kind of come to fruition. Batarang is perfectly
Batarang.
Acceptable. Batarang's perfectly acceptable. They're getting better on proportions. Art's getting a lot better.
Proportions.
I was going to do a Star Trek joke. There's that weird plot hole Swiss cheese stuff that I got to learn to get over, because...
Well, that's kind of why I'm not really gonna, we're not gonna look too much into the 30s and 40s stuff, because I think that's just kind of the era.
I did put that in my notes. I was gonna ask you, when can we just skip to Robin?
we're gonna work our way up to Robin.
Coming pretty quick. The thing that I think I liked the least was, like you said, like inserting Dr. Death into the story. It could have been anybody in that story.
Well, I mean, there's no motives for anybody.
And you know, if they wanted it to be Dr.
Why is the monk doing any of this stuff? Why did he go to a castle that is in Paris so that he can go to a castle that he has in Hungary? Why do we have the Paris thing?
If they can specify that it's been a week since Dr. Death was last seen, or since the initial incident, they can't rectify the things like, why are they going to Paris, or what's the monk's motivation? Like, they put in these tidbits to acknowledge minor parts of the story, or to reconcile minor parts of the story, but they don't go after those bigger things of, why is the monk doing this in the first place?
But, on the other hand, though, this is a very influential issue. We got Batman looking like Batman will always look. The
Pretty
ears
much.
Are where they're going to be. The costume's where it's going to be. We got the Batarang. We got a flying vehicle looks like a bat. Julie's not like somebody that she only kind of gets referenced every once in a while when they're trying to do like...
We're seeing a little bit of detective work.
We're seeing some detective work, and we're getting like supporting cast. John, right. Before we started recording, was like, so how long is Julie around for? Is she just this episode? I'm like, no, she shows up every once in a while. Why'd she leave? And because she goes to Hollywood,
her planet needed her, and she just got a full
And John
office
kept asking me, so is there any reason? I said, she goes to Hollywood to be an actress.
But do they actually break up?
She goes to Hollywood to be an actress.
They just don't...
That's what happens.
That's all we get.
Stop trying to think that these things have amazing storylines with them.
So I that's one of the things I'll be excited to when we get to these other milestones and events of, you know, this writing kind of being reconciled into... we know we have to make this a little more of a long-standing medium because people are really reading this.
Because, mm-hmm. I mean, we're like after this, we're going to look at Silver Age, and it's just going to be goofy shit.
Yeah, I don't know how long I want to spend in Silver Age
honest. We'll spend a little bit of time, but...
Silver Age has a lot of miscellaneous milestone things in there, too. The thing I'm most excited for to get to is, like, the 70s. I'm really excited for the
70s. I think 70s is really when we're going to hit our stride on what we're used to.
Coming next episode, we'll be talking about Detective Comics 32 and 33. In Detective Comics 32, next stop in the Batman World Tour, Hungary! For some reason. And then after that in...
Let's see if we can polish this turd.
What happens when vampires stop being nice and start getting real?
Okay.
I just wanted to put down for my show notes, because it doesn't matter. But listen to us, because we're great. Hate mail can go to sac.alfred@gmail.com.
Thanks for sticking around to the third episode, since the last episode ended with us going, boy, we're kind of shit, aren't we?
We're getting better.
We're getting better.
No, we're going to be totally great. We're the best thing
ever. So what happens in Detective Comics 33? Because I've not read it.
In 33, Death Ray's Take Manhattan is what I have. So it's a Death Ray in Manhattan.
Okay.
And that basically sums up the issue, actually.
So we're already into science fiction shit.
You know what? I kind of am excited for that, actually. Kind of,
that's surprising, though. So,
right? They're going
so
for
why don't you guys come back for some sci-fi shit, and we'll have some fun, throw some batarangs.
I can't wait for
pick
more
batarangs. Pick up our fiancés, all that good stuff.
Listeners can find us on Twitter. We are at SACBatPod. You can also use that as our hashtag. Or email us at sac.alfred@gmail.com. SAC episodes are also available on Apple Podcasts, as well as our website, which we have listed in our episode description. And we do plan on being available on other podcasting services as well. We just have to work on the kinks on that if it hasn't been worked on by the time this recording has been put out. Yep, I have been John Pfeiffer.
I'm Chris Winia.
We'll see you around.
Thank you.
I'm going to take that edit, and I'm going to put that at the end of the episode after the theme song ends, or the outro ends, so that like, if you're really listening to the very end, all of a sudden you just hear some wet noises.
Just me playing with my tongue.